Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have a good buddy of ours, actually coming back for the first time since, I believe you were on the third episode of The Speakeasy?
Something like that.
Third or fourth? We'll ask Jack about that. He can look that up fast. back, Thomas Waugh, come back to the studio, back to The Speakeasy. Good to have you back. I mean, I've seen you out and about outside of the studio or work, as I shouldn't call it because it's not really that.
It's good to be back.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Episode two.
Holy cow.
That's right. Nice. Who was one? Brian Miller?
Yeah, it was. Nice. It was Brian Miller.
You've been busy lately. You are now the director of bar operations for Major Food Group, which includes Parm and Teresi Italian Specialties and Carbone, which is the bar program you've been working on lately.
Yeah, that's where I'm spending all my time now.
That's why I haven't seen you too often.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So, I don't even remember what we talked about last time you were on the show. I mean, I'm sure we talked a bunch of nerdy bar talk, but I don't know. I think you and I, over the past 2 years, have kind of moved in different directions from the uber nerd den, you know, as far as, like, cocktails go.
Definitely.
Still, you know, obviously very, like, interested in all the techniques and stuff. I think now it's become, like, more of, like, a part of our, like, repertoire, would you say? Like, it's something you don't even think about anymore.
Yeah, I'd say definitely the bar scene in general is just starting to mellow out a little bit, I think. Certain things are becoming norm now, you know. Like I was telling you earlier, I think using fresh juices and nice spirits and fresh vermouth and stuff, that's just sort of become a norm now. I think we're trying to find a way to keep progressing without being too pretentious, you know. The bar scene has definitely gotten a little pretentious, I think, in the past year. So figuring out ways to make it fun but still progress and try to be the best.
I feel like, you know, like there's this, you know, obviously over the past few years, there was kind of like little waves, like backlashes against like the cocktail bar and like the the very exclusive like door policy, like no windows, 3 hour wait if we even let you in kind of thing.
Right.
And what's cool about that too is like it's not only like customers kind of getting pissed off about that, but then like regular like everyday bartenders that, you know, or like neighborhood people or restaurant bartenders, they've started upping their game because they see that obviously for one there's a career in it.
Yeah.
But also it's like, hey man, come to our bar. We're actually nice to you when we have like good drinks, you know.
Yeah.
We're not gonna like kill you with like molecular gastronomy, but you know, it's like, yeah, it's so we're all kind of going back to like a bar being a bar.
It's funny, people seem to like hate, you know, customers I'd say like to hate. Well, even colleagues and, you know, friends, I guess, you know, and everyone likes to hate on each other, especially, you know, when you see change happening and people don't like, in general, don't really like change until you expose it to them enough that, you know, that they suddenly realize, oh, I am spoiled. I do like that Manhattan the way that, you know, Damon makes it over at Prime Meats. Like, it's kind of like how I got into coffee and stuff in the beginning, you know. It was easy, you know, it's easy to talk shit about the fancy, you know, Uber coffee, you know, pour over and, you know, all the fancy drinks. But then once you are exposed to, we've been exposed to it for enough years now where it's like nobody goes to the deli and gets a black coffee really anymore. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody, but people that care, you know, it's just interesting how things evolve when you're just constantly being, you know, hit with it. You know, everywhere you go, you're just like, oh, like you're really going to talk shit about getting a really nice drink, a well-made drink? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're trying to say is, like, it's so many of these things have become the norm that it's really where anywhere you go, you should be able to expect, like, to get a good coffee, good cocktail.
Right.
An awesome pair of jeans, You know, whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Seriously, though, it's like, you know, with all the artisanal craft, like, producers, it's like, it's more of a norm. And, like, I don't know, maybe it does make that bodega coffee seem a little bit shitty, but we're used to it for so long.
Yeah.
But I don't know, sometimes you also want to crack open a Budweiser, too. And sometimes you want that bodega coffee.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's where, like, when the dive bar thing comes into it, you know, that's where you go to sort of leave your place. Leave your work, for me anyway.
Yeah.
I love dive bars.
Yeah, me too. I mean, like, I don't know. I, you know, I go back and forth, like, what my end goal is, like, the bars I want to open.
Right.
Most of them are dive bars. Yeah. Like, all these business plans that I've got going, which is great because you really don't have to write much of a business plan.
True. You just have to have really good taste in music.
Yeah, exactly. And really shitty taste in decor.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the program at Carbone. What you've been working on as far as, like, tell us, I mean, give us the rundown of, like, the restaurant in general.
Yeah, okay. Well, so Carbone is, we've been open for about 3 weeks now. Well, if you count our week of friends and family, it's been a month. But it's the same owners, the Major Food Group, who owns Terese Italian Specialty. It's Rich Terese, Mario Carbone, and Jeff Zelaznik are the main owners. There's, you know, a slew of investors, of course, but just like anything. But basically what we've decided to do with this project, Carbone, is, it's hard to explain without it sounding cheesy or shticky. It, in a way, it is a little bit shticky, but we're taking our inspiration from the old New York Italian, not Italian, not rustic Italian. We're going for, like, a very New York vibe. These guys are, like, very, very passionate about New York. In, like, researching for this whole idea, they ate at every single old school New York Italian restaurant in all the boroughs, even into Jersey. You know, everybody, I feel like almost everyone that's grown up in the United States can relate to an experience growing up where their parents took you to this old, like, kind of not grimy, but, you know, like, the old school New York, mid-century style New York Italian, or like a American Italian restaurant, you know, with the red and white checkered tablecloths and, you know, breadsticks and stuff. Yeah, of course. You know, there's like a million, you know, sort of generalizations about these places, and they're there because they're true. We wanted to do that idea, but actually make it really good. Take the approach that we take at Terese Italian Specialties, which is very, very, very much about high quality food and the ingredients being very high quality, the technique, everything about cooking, everything that goes onto the plate is exquisite. So Carbone, basically, the space is on Thompson Street between Halston and Bleecker. It's across the street from Mario Batali's Lupa. It's in the old Rocco space. And a lot of people are familiar, at least with the sign, the Rocco sign. Yeah. They've seen it. I don't know. A lot of people who in the neighborhood have been coming in and saying, oh, we've eaten at Rocco since, you know, 1926 or whatever. I never ate there, so I don't know a whole lot about Rocco's food. But I do know that it was sort of a beloved neighborhood spot, an institution, so to speak. So to have that space was pretty amazing for us in the idea as far as the theme and what we wanted to do with it. I know a lot of people are a little salty about, you know, that transition and whatnot. And, you know, you're always going to have people who, again, don't want change. They want everything to stay the same. But we really honored Rocco in the sense we kept the sign up. We did have, you know, the lighting, the neon sign, Carbone over Rocco, but the Rocco sign is still there. During the day, you can't even see the Carbone sign. You still only see the Rocco sign.
That's cool.
And there's so many things about the restaurant, the decor, too, that we kept the same, even though we had to gut it because it was just a really old restaurant. You know, like, things were just deteriorating.
Yeah.
We gutted it, but we rebuilt it the same way that it was built before.
Oh, that's cool, man.
So it's, like, very cool. People who knew Rocco from back in the day walk in and they go, wow, this is crazy. Like, this, it's like, what is this? You know, like they're kind of confused. Like, did you keep this? No, you didn't. But no, I'd say along with, like, the theme of the restaurant, the food is very much, we take classic dishes, classic cocktails. Everything is very much in the theme of the 1950s, you know, from the music to the drinks. And we try to keep that sort of center, but then elevate that and modernize it in a way. So
yeah,
That's basically the idea of Carbone.
Yeah, and like you were saying, like I actually when you were working on the menu a few months back, you were showing me like examples of like the really old school like cocktail menus,
right?
Where it's just like lists of like Gimlet, like Tom Collins, and it's like $6.75, you know?
Yeah,
and just like all the general classics.
Coming from Death and Company, if you guys have ever been there, you'd know that it's like reading that menu is kind of like reading the Bible. Like nobody really wants to read it. It's like, so it's been a refreshing project for me because I'm doing the complete opposite where, you know, like you said, looking at old menus, you would just see, it was just a list. It said Martini, Manhattan, Gimlet. It had the price. It didn't even have, you know, the description. It didn't have even the list of ingredients. We're sticking to that sort of same idea and only having classic cocktails. But again, just like the kitchen would take a classic dish, you know, like scampi or, taking
chicken parm.
Yeah, exactly. You're taking those things that you would see on an old menu in those places and getting something that's recognizable, but very different flavor-wise, very heightened in a way.
Yeah. You know, and, like, kind of going back to what we were saying before about, like, you know, even, like, with the kind of... We're starting to see this, like, modern trend of bars and restaurants that are getting away from, like, what we were saying before, like, being so exclusive and actually getting back to having more fun with it and being more inviting and, like, kind of, like, upping that kind of, like, family style and, like, customer service and, like, you know... trying to like include people instead of like push them out.
Carbone's all about that. I think anyone that actually goes and has an experience there is going to love it because it's all about it's an entertainment, you know, it's a whole setting of entertainment, you know. We refer to a lot of our service techniques as moves, like he's got moves, you know. And the idea behind our moves is that you get a little bit of a show, you know, you get something, you get a waiter that comes to your, you know, table in a burgundy tuxedo and he's already holding this giant wheel of cheese that Murray's dunks in Chianti for 3 days and then ages in their cellars. Like the food is very serious, but at the same time,
but
when you sit at your table,
it.
Exactly. Like the waiter comes to your table with this giant chunk of cheese and just, before he even asks you what water you want, you get a big piece of Parmesan cheese on your on your bread plate, you know.
Dude, I love stuff like that, man. That's and you know, especially like with you know with the Dead Rabbit just opening, like what was like a month ago, maybe not even
something like that.
They also like it's like an amuse-bouche, you know. They bring out like a small glass of punch and like really cool old china, and it's like, wow, we haven't even gotten our waters yet, but you're like already like buying us drinks.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's all about the amuse-bouche.
It's so
cool. It's like the first thing that you see is like, bam, you just got something for free.
That's awesome.
You know, and it's like, whoa, and if it's delicious, it's even better.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like...
My job at Carbone is to finish the night. Everyone, every single customer gets free limoncello, house-made limoncello, and infused grappa.
Nice. So. Nice. Is it your personal limoncello recipe?
It is indeed.
I've had that a few times.
Yeah. I worked on it quite a bit. I think maybe you haven't had the final. But it's been an evolution.
And even if I did, I probably wouldn't remember. There's been a
That's
lot of
the idea. Yeah.
All right, Thomas, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue talking with Thomas Waugh of Carbone.
You are listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by the Dead Stars on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thank you. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. In the studio today, we have my good old buddy Thomas Waugh of Carbone. And we were just talking about this new restaurant from the Teresi and Parm group. And it's cool. First of all, like, I really like it when you're talking about old school New York restaurants and, you know, basically renovating what was originally there, taking like the original furniture stuff, even using the original sign of Rocco.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those things that like really pisses me off about this city. It's like, there's so much like, first of all, just like coming from a design background and just like architecture, like the love of architecture and all this stuff. It's like so many cool buildings and so many cool establishments that have been like torn apart to make something really dumb happen and to preserve like the good like profile of classic New York. I think it's really cool. And you know, furthermore, you're talking about like the dishes you have there and how they're like inspired by the classics. But obviously, you can't just make the classics, because then why would you want to go check out this new restaurant and have the same shit that someone else had?
Right. Yeah, I think we were talking about that earlier. If you go on Eater and read about Carbone right now, it's fucking ridiculous. There's a thread about the Caesar salad at Carbone, and I couldn't even read the entire thread. It was so long, and people are up in arms about how our Caesar is not a classic Caesar. I think it has. To be perfectly honest with you, I couldn't tell you every single ingredient that's in our Caesar, and I couldn't tell you what every ingredient is in a classic Caesar. But to me, it seems a little ridiculous how upset people get about something changing again, like going back to like how people hate change so much. Why would you go to a restaurant and have the classic Caesar salad that you had when you were in Italy? Like, well, you know, you're in New York now. Why can't you take a classic dish and tweak it the way you want it to be tweaked to make it taste better or different? You know,
it's like Roberta's has the best fucking pizza in New York City and they don't even have pepperonis. FTW.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess taking that idea of taking a classic and tweaking it is exactly what we decided to do with the cocktail menu as well. It's all classic cocktails, very, very simple, recognizable drinks. The Manhattan, our Gibson is sort of our house martini, even though we do make martinis, and I do make plenty of dirty martinis as well. And I just, you know, basically taking classic drinks and tweaking them enough that you could still call them a classic. At least I feel like I can still call it a classic, but it being different enough to be interesting and better. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like putting a fancy paint better, job on a Camaro. It's like, it's not a stock color. Still a Camaro, though.
Right.
And the color is better.
Yeah. I mean, you talk to any cocktail purist, like Toby Cicchini, to name one, he'd probably flip his lid if he saw my cocktail menu. He'd probably roll over and die. But I don't know. I think it, at some point you have to just free yourself from, you know, these like restrictions that come along with classic purism, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the argument would be that you should give it a different name, right? A lot of times. But at the same time, it's if you don't mess with it that much, I think, you know, if it's...
Yeah. Well, it's kind of bullshit, too, when you look at a cocktail menu and it's like, oh, it's the, you know, dwarf's head or something like that. But it's really a zombie with, like, an extra dash of absinthe. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But that's, like, the whole history in, like, timeline of cocktails in general, like, classic cocktails. It's like, oh... For instance, like you said, like martinis and Gibsons, it's like it's the same fucking drink. You just change the garnish.
Right.
And it's still something that's like brined. Right. You know, it's like, come on. You gave it a whole different name?
Yeah.
Seriously? Come on, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with doing it. I do it on the Prime Meats menu, like our house Manhattan or house old fashioned.
Right.
You know, they're made with two different types of homemade bitters, and like people will, you know.
And
judge.
Ultimately, what are you going to do? But, you're going to go there and drink. Like,
yeah.
Why do you go to a bar? Why do you go step up to a bar? You go there to have fun, get loose, drink,
yeah,
meet people, talk to people. Like, we're missing the point here, you know? Like,
yeah, break my iPhone on the floor or in the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Drop your iPhone in the toilet.
Hi. There are people waving at us. So, okay, then give us some examples of your classic cocktails at Carbone.
Well, while we're on the subject of the Gibson, I'll just tell you exactly what I do with the Gibson. I'm playing off of the idea that the Gibson is sort of a savory style martini, but also the best Gibsons I've ever had have also been a slightly wetter version of a martini. Mm-hmm. You and I have been to Keen's Chop House numerous times, and that's our drink, you know?
Yeah, Boodle's Gibsons, man.
Boodle's Gibsons, and it's exactly what I use. I use Boodle's. I add a pinch of salt to give it that little bit of brine, a little briny flavor, but I also go slightly wet on it. The vermouth that I use is infused with rosemary. So we're adding a little bit of a sweet, savory, salty element to a classic martini, basically. But still very much just a martini, you know, I think it's just a martini. If you looked at it and you sipped at it, you would say, oh, this is a martini. You'd recognize it as a martini, but it has some very subtle flavors that are sort of playing with your memory of a martini, I guess.
Yeah, you know, just to add something to that, it's like I feel like very rarely does anyone, when they order a martini, actually want a martini. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't want it. They don't want it 2-1. They want it very, very dry, or they want it dirty. So no,
That's a whole nother thing. If you want to talk about classics right now, like martini circa when?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to talk about a martini, it was a sweet vermouth drink. It's hardly a gin drink, you know?
Yeah. What, so I know you were playing around with also like another classic that we all love, the daiquiri.
Yep. Okay. So our daiquiri again, I'm taking some liberties here. If you watch me make the daiquiri, you'll notice I pick up a bottle of chartreuse, yellow chartreuse. I know a lot of cocktail purists again would be like, "What are you doing putting chartreuse in a daiquiri that doesn't belong there?" And I agree with you, for the most part. But what are you going to do? You know, I'm gonna try to make the best version of a daiquiri I can make. So basically, our daiquiri is pretty much a riff on a Daisy de Santiago, which is an old Charles H. Baker cocktail. It was his favorite version of a daiquiri. And if you know who Charles H. Baker is, he was an awesome drinker, awesome writer.
He was an awesome drinker.
Yeah. So we're I'm putting my daiquiri on crushed ice. It's very much a classic daiquiri in the sense it's just fresh lime juice, sugar, and white rum, but then I'm also serving it on crushed ice, so it's sort of presented in a goblet as you would might get a
back in the day, like at one of these places,
right? You know, like a blended daiquiri. Awesome. It's not exactly blended; it's still shaken and poured over crushed ice, but it is presented as almost like a blended daiquiri.
That's awesome.
And then you get a float of chartreuse over the top and grated lime zest over the top. It's like it's a daiquiri. It's a daiquiri.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not exactly, you know, you could call it a daiquiri number 8 or something if you wanted to, but I'm not going to do that.
Well, I will. That's how I'm going to order it when I come. Get like 5 daiquiri number 8s.
Yeah.
Give us, so you were saying also about the Manhattan, like, and we were talking about it before the show, that, you know, about adding a dash of like mole bitters or, you know, subbing out like different vermouth and stuff. Where do you stand with that?
Yeah. I mean, this is the way I see it. If, no matter what, you're going to have haters. People are going to go, if they're going to read your menu, and if it says it's called the, you know, the Tranhattan or something, I don't know, and it's just a difference of a dash of bitters, really, yeah. and you're going to call it something else, I think that's just stupid. You might have, I don't know. If we'd had this interview a year ago, I might have had something completely different to say, but I'm always changing my mind about things.
And that's good. I mean, you should.
The idea of this restaurant was to make a classic cocktail menu with drinks that are better than the classic.
I like
and
it.
I can't guarantee you that it's better than the classic, but I can tell you that it's different and interesting.
I think what you're trying to say is that it would be better than the classic on the menu from the time period.
Oh, it's definitely better than the classic on the menu from the time period.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I don't think after Prohibition, the state of cocktail making and the craft just went completely to shit.
Yeah.
And only now are we finally getting back to it.
Yeah. But so, also, like, yeah, I mean, like, I find it to be a very admirable program, you know, like, especially because I know when you were at Death & Company, you always had a section on the menu that was called the Redemption section, and there was, you did a, like, a grasshopper or a stinger?
Both.
Both.
I actually have a stinger on the menu at Carbone as well.
Nice. And, like, there were other ones, like, and give me an example. I think there was, like, a pina colada at one point.
Yeah, we had a pina colada. We did a mudslide.
Yeah, there was a mudslide. But it was, like, that version, it was, like, that page on the menu where it was, like, here are these, like, classics. And actually, kind of from that era that you're doing at Carbone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah, when we were just using terrible products.
Right.
And, yeah, like you said, redeeming them.
Like, yeah, that's the whole idea, you know? We're also opening a cocktail bar down the street, just like 4 or 5 doors down from Carbone. It's going to be called the Lobster Club, which is where that's where like a little bit more of a creative thing is going to come, or something hopefully a little bit more original is going to come out. But yeah, Lobster Club is going to be an amazing idea. I think it's going to be a sandwich shop during the day, and we're going to serve Lobster Club sandwiches. with your choice of red or white sauce. It's like a very simple thing, but we're going for like a very specific thing, you know. It's going to be Lobster Club sandwiches during the day. We're going to close down for a few hours in between period, like between, you know, lunch and dinner. And at night, when we open, it's going to be like a stunning cocktail lounge.
Cool.
And we're going to have raw bar, small bites, you know, maybe some bruschettas and some small things to sort of, as food to aid you in your drinking and whatnot.
And you were saying before the show that maybe you guys were going to do some... You're going to get a little bit more tech with some of the ingredients.
Yeah, definitely. I at Carbone, I think it's... To me, it's simple.
Yeah.
To a lot of people, it's not, you know? Like, but, you know, just like anything, if you're a chef and you're used to being around all these gadgets all the time, you know, it's nothing to you, I guess. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but to me, Carbone is simple and classic, and that's that. Lobster Club is going to be more challenging, I guess. I'm going to try to utilize as much as I know, try to utilize as the kitchen as much as I can. I want my garnishes to be, you know, outstanding. I want this to be, like I said, at Carbone, we have tableside moves. I want Lobster Club for the cocktails to have tableside moves. Nice. I want some things to be presented to you at your table that are going to stun you.
You should have like a punch bowl with like a live lobster in it, just like
shooting just, fireworks out of
just,
it.
Yeah, just like stirring up the drink. Like, yeah, totally. Awesome, Thomas.
That's an amazing idea. I think I'm gonna.
All right,
thank you for that.
Yeah, you heard it here first. All right, Thomas, man, it's been really good talking to you. I'm glad you came back on the show.
Thanks so much for
really
having
stoked
me,
for checking out Carbone and the Lobster Club as soon as it's open. Do you happen to have an ETA on that?
Lobster Club is supposed to be open in a month from now, but you know how restaurant
so
and bar
two
openings
months.
Go.
We're going to say 2 months.
I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to get in trouble.
All right, Thomas, man. It's great having you.
Yeah, you too,
and
buddy.
Come back anytime.
Thank you so much, man.
All right, that's it for this week on The Speakeasy. Till next week, Damon Bolte. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.